Oof. What a day. Dome Theory 97, I'm Bobby Manning. We have Justin Rowan here today to talk about Cavaliers-Celtics. About to go off tonight, as you probably listen to this. Wednesday night, Celtics and Cavaliers rematch. Phenomenal game. One of the best of the early season. Overtime thriller. Back and forth leads handed off in the fourth quarter. Donovan Mitchell, Caris LeVert both score 41. Tatum and Brown rolling the start this year. Good defensive efforts on both ends in the important moments. And then the Cavaliers took off in overtime. We're going to kick off with that, but of course, the big news right now, Kyrie. It's Ime Udoka heading to join forces with him, Kevin Durant, that whole collective. Once again, I think we all imagined a world where that might happen once Ime Udoka got suspended. Never thought it would happen this quickly, especially in the wake of the firing of Steve Nash. So it puts Udoka back out in the visible space to answer questions and face some of the scrutiny of what happened in Boston, because I think that's still something that hasn't been answered. Why he wasn't fired, why he was held in limbo, and why now he was allowed to leave Boston for a division rival. I don't think anyone ever thought he would coach again in Boston. I also wasn't sure that he was going to coach this year, especially with everything revolving around him. And it certainly raises a bunch of new questions on both sides, mostly for the Nets. And that's the benefit for the Celtics here. Could they have gotten compensation? Could they have not? I still haven't heard a great answer on that. Though they seemingly saw the most benefit being getting out of his contract, getting out of the rest of this year. I'm sure there were some legalities that prevented them from firing him at least immediately. And if they did, he would have ended up in Brooklyn anyway. And I doubt they would have been able to hold him away from a job that he wanted, particularly when this seemed like a way to buy themselves and him some time after the investigation went through late in the summer and they found out that they needed to send him away from this team. And again, are the Celtics stupid? You think they hurt themselves? You think they potentially helped the Nets? You think they caused all this chaos around their team to start the year while hiring a 34-year-old first-time head coach out of spite or some sort of... I don't know. I don't even know what people think the Celtics did this for. To me, though, even if it wasn't a crime, even if it wasn't something that would jump off the page to everybody that he needs to go, if this situation was untenable and there was no way that they were going to be able to get through without distraction, without it becoming a story midway through the year, without them needing to do this later, I think they probably made the right move. And I loved Udoka. Loved getting to know him last year a little bit, covering him. I loved his answers in press conferences and his approach to that position and certainly the job he did on the floor. It's a brutal loss. I don't know if it's going to save Brooklyn. They certainly need to pull an emergency switch and go desperate, and they'll get plenty of criticism for doing it. And it has already started. But they have bigger problems. Kyrie, the off-the-court stuff, the anti-Semitism he promoted in that movie. Whether he wants to call it promotion or not, he put it out there on his platform and showed no remorse for it, which was telling in itself. I don't know how long he's going to be in Brooklyn. I said that on the Garden Report today. Whether or not they move forward with Durant, it's possible Kyrie's time is up and they try to rebuild around the other pieces there. They'll try to make this work. I think they're divided, though. You could tell in Sean Marks' press conference today that they're trying to figure out what the best thing to do is right now, because he could have gone out in that presser yesterday, which Marks admitted did not go well. Apologized, backed off. He did delete the tweet at this point, but didn't separate himself from the ideology, which, again, I'm sure many people are having debates over it. I didn't see the film. I do have a general idea about the ideology, though, and I don't get what it advances beyond creating some sort of division between black people and Jewish people, and trying to state, which has been done by many people throughout time, including one famous dictator, that the Jewish people are responsible for others' misfortune, which, considering the way the Jews have been treated throughout history, I don't think they are running the world in the way that these conspiracies allege. I think they'd be in a much better standing in society if they were pulling the strings behind the scenes. And, you know, that's just one easy rebuke of those conspiracies. There's obviously much better ones. So I don't know why he has jumped down that rabbit hole that obviously Ye started. We've obviously heard Kendrick talk about that on Damn as well. I never really understood what the point of that ideology is. It doesn't make much sense to me. Maybe I need to research it some more, as they say, as Kyrie would say. But at this point, this goes back to my point about Kyrie. If it wasn't the vaccine last year, it was going to be something else. And I don't know how much time he has left in the league when this continues to go beyond what he's doing on the floor, which, you know, in recent years, he's rarely been available. And Brooklyn doesn't seem ready to commit to him. This probably doesn't help. And who else will be around the league? He could have become a free agent last summer and pursued opportunities elsewhere. Maybe the Lakers act out of desperation themselves. Certainly, this week in Brooklyn shows that teams will not draw any lines when it comes to ways to escape terrible situations. And the Lakers have a worse one than the Nets. So this is just the beginning, I think. Brooklyn, I don't think one coaching change can fix what's wrong there. It goes much deeper. You got the Simmons angle, who's already hurt. You have two injuries to key shooters on the wings. You have a GM, I think, who's probably next in terms of the hot seat. And you have an owner who doesn't seem to love any of this. Justin Rowan's up next. We'll talk to him about this. Start off with Cavs Celtics talk. I also appeared on the Chase Down podcast Tuesday night, so go check that out as well on YouTube, the official Cavaliers YouTube page that's available. We went live. And we here at Dome Theory are brought to you by Athletic Greens. AthleticGreens.com/garden gets you 5 free travel packs of their powder that you pour into your drink each morning. Gives you a little energetic boost, as well as 75 vitamins, minerals, adaptogens, probiotics, all whole food sourced, all environmentally friendly, and a great way to get all those things in one place. They'll also throw in that year's supply of vitamin D, immune boosting, which is key. Great gear over there too when you go try it out. AthleticGreens.com/garden is where you can get that offer. We're brought to you by Calm. Calm, an app I use every night to get to sleep. Sleep, one of the most important things for your mental health. And if yoga, meditation, all those things are for you, those are available over there as well. A little bit of something for everyone, even bedtime stories. And that whole library is available for 40% off when you go to calm.com/garden. Support the Garden Report. Support Calm, great app, millions of people use it. And like I said, everybody has their own thing for mental health and wellness. They'll have something for you, I can guarantee it. So just go check it out and give it a try. And Bet Online, day ones, my Bet Online friends, betonline.ag, the place to go to check out sports information and make a wager on the games. So much going on right now. We got the World Series, rain delay, setting up a big string of games on that slate between Philadelphia and Houston. I'm excited to dive into that right now. I do like the Phillies to win this series, and right now you could get them as of Tuesday night at plus 152 to beat the Astros. I am in on that. Football getting underway this weekend as well. Thursday night, you have the Eagles and Texans going at it. -13.5 Eagles, as well as a full slate of Sunday games. Patriots -5.5. And NBA, hockey, MMA. You have soccer. The World Cup's coming up. This is about to be the best time of year to bet, and it starts now. Go to betonline.ag. Use our code CLNS50. You should know it by now. 50% back on your first deposit when you sign up and use it. It's $100 in, $50 free to play on top of that. And BetOnline has this great site that just is so easy to navigate. All the odds, props, same game parlays available there as well. Live betting. Everything you can imagine over there, as well as their Vegas casino games. So go check them out, betonline.ag, code CLNS50, betonline, where the game starts. And this is Dome Theory 97 with Justin Rowan. Hey, Bobby Manning here. Welcome to Dome Theory 97, pack show. I'm expecting a lot of people in the room. We just finished up our Garden Report talking about The Ime Udoka situation, we'll get to that here as well. But the plan today was for a crossover edition. Welcoming in our good friend here, Justin Rowan. I'll be joining his podcast, The Chase Down, over on the Cavaliers YouTube page in a little bit, 8:30 tonight. But we'll talk about that game on Friday night first and the rematch coming up tomorrow. That was awesome on Friday, Justin. I had about as much fun at that game as I have at any regular season game over the last couple of years here. Back and forth, overtime, free throws, clutch free throws for Jared Allen. You had that dunk by Brown that I thought over Mitchell was going to seal the game. You have two guys on the Cavs scoring 41 each. You have Tatum and Brown rolling and hard to stop, and some of the guys stepping up for them over there. This is the kind of game that makes you imagine a playoff series between these two teams and how great that would be.
Yeah, it really would be great. I didn't watch that game live. I was going to a CFL game, and I was checking the box score the entire time, just tuning in. I needed to know what was happening. I would have felt the same way as you. As I was rewatching it the next morning, that Jaylen Brown dunk, that's the type of play that, you know, when that happens at the Garden, you just assume this is a young team that's still trying to, you know, figure out what their hierarchy is, figure out just how they're going to operate. I just don't expect kind of like that veteran composure from a Cavs team that was missing Darius Garland, is still young, is integrating a new piece in Donovan Mitchell, and for them to blow a lead in Boston, retake the lead, and then ultimately win that game in overtime was a really, really pleasant surprise early in the season.
So here's my big pleasant surprise, frankly, because I love him as a player, and I always have had high hopes for him, is Caris LeVert. We talked about him a little bit coming into the season, where he'd be on this roster. Can he be that wing? We had high hopes for Isaac Okoro, who's kind of gotten lost in the shuffle early on. But yeah, to see LeVert step up in that position, especially with Darius Garland getting hurt in the first game, is huge. And almost, it's not a break to see Garland get hurt, but to have that opportunity for LeVert early and often to have the ball in his hands, figure out how to gel with Donovan Mitchell and have some monster performances. I mean, of course, 41 points is great, but two offensive rebounds in crunch time were critical. You know, the Celtics were piling up stops late there. He carved out a few possessions and then took the second one out and hit a huge three. I think it tied the game. That was just an epic performance from him there, as good as Mitchell was too.
Yeah, and I think Cavs fans were waiting for a game where it all kind of came together from Caris LeVert, because what stood out with his early season performances, he's really bought into what JB Bickerstaff has been asking of him, which is, you know, keep the ball moving, be kind of a little more selective in what shots you take, compete on the defensive end. He's had really active hands and has contributed on that end of the court for the Cavs, and the assist totals have been really good for him as well. But that was the first game where it really kind of clicked outside of his three-point shooting. The three-point shooting has been relatively consistent for him this year, but overall the efficiency hasn't been there. But the thing with Caris LeVert is, if he's doing all those other things, which he did some of that earlier in his career in Boston, or not Boston, in Brooklyn, where, you know, even though he wasn't a lockdown defender, he was kind of their primary defensive stopper, and he was someone that could run the pick and roll with Jared Allen, and he could do all these other things. If he's doing those things, you can kind of ride the wave with him offensively on the nights he has and the nights he doesn't, and it's almost fitting that he followed up a 41-point performance with a 1-point performance against the Knicks. I'm sure a lot of Celtics fans looked at that box score and were like, why did it have to be against us?
That is the way it goes for him. And he's streaky. I'm interested to see how he looks at fitting in more in that wing spot alongside Garland when he comes back, and, mm-hmm. Having that full complement there at the guard spot. So Garland back in that position, you have Mitchell rolling at the front. You couldn't have imagined a better start for Mitchell in Cleveland. It's that explosive scoring. The ability, I think, in that game, if we're still talking about LeVert here, to kind of move on and off the ball bodes well, I think. He did some really good stuff down the stretch there, I thought, in terms of setting up LeVert, send screens and some other stuff. So I think he's looking good as a facilitator. JB Bickerstaff was talking about that before the game, just how good he's done in that passing role while Garland was out there. And you just see, there were some doubts. We shared some of the potential downsides of Mitchell coming in here in terms of things he needs to work on. Mm-hmm. But you can almost just sense the opportunity in front of him here, and just escaping what was becoming like a rudderless situation in Utah seems to have sparked him, because this looks like the guy who was battling with Denver in the playoffs and putting up those massive scoring nights and really showing himself to be one of the more dynamic scorers in the league.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, when you're doing team building in the NBA, like I think everyone wants to pretend that their favorite team has it down to a science, but it's all educated gambles, right? Like, what do we feel like this guy's going to do if we bring him into our system, into our culture? And when you look at the Donovan Mitchell trade, to me right now, it's looking like a win-win. The Cavs were pretty adamant.
Good point.
The Cavs were pretty adamant that Lauri Markkanen was going to have a breakout for them. They had some of the reporting around them was he's the closest thing to a fourth member of the core. And you look at what Lowry's doing in Utah, and he's playing fantastic. Colin Sexton obviously is taking some time to come along there. But part of the gamble was, hey, if we get Donovan Mitchell here, we feel confident that we're going to be able to alleviate some of the burden off of him. He's going to be able to play more on the defensive end. We think he's a better passer than he's shown to this point, and that we can have this two-way all-around game from Donovan. And obviously, there's still going to be some limitations on the defensive end at times, but he's really bought into playing within that defensive system. And I think when you look at the difference between Cleveland and Utah, Utah, just as their roster got older, they were forced to stagger both Mitchell and Gobert throughout the course of a game so that, hey, we at least have one kind of elite talent on one end of the floor at all times. The Cavs, they have multiple guys that can run that pick and roll with them, right? Like, you have Kevin Love, you have Robin Lopez even off the bench. Dean Wade is able to do some stuff. Isaac Okoro has been used in the screening game. And of course, Jared Allen and Evan Mobley has improved in that area as well. So when you have all of these options that allow Mitchell to kind of get his man off of him, make reads in space, and be kind of that explosive threat that he is, I think you're seeing kind of an unlocked version of him. And some of the credit has to go to the Cavs coaching staff. Some of it has to go to Kobe Altman for the personnel. And some of it has to go to Mitchell as well, because he was pretty honest throughout the offseason saying, hey, I wasn't in good enough shape last year. I didn't have one of my best seasons. I know the numbers were good, but I could have been better. He owned that himself. And I think all of those things have come together to contribute to this great start that he's had.
Yeah, and I think both of those guys could eventually benefit from breaking up, going to new situations. There was a spark. I saw it in that first game, Minnesota. Cat throwing alley-oops to Rudy and running the floor, looking good. I think a guy who writes about the Jazz had tweeted that they threw the ball to Rudy as much as they had in only 6% of games in his Utah career in that first game. So I had hope. And then it fell apart pretty quickly. And you just have that classic weirdness going on in Minnesota there. And I was trying to be fair between those two. I think Mitchell took some responsibility for not at least like letting Rudy touch the ball and making him feel involved and doing those different mm-hmm. things you kind of have to do as a ball handler, even if you don't necessarily trust him being a guy with the ball in his hands trying to score. And at the same time, there was obviously plenty Rudy could have done to play more versatile and not get knocked out of games and such. But so far, it's looking like Mitchell is the more dynamic of those two, the more, one who should get credit out of Utah for their success over those years. Because, again, you're just seeing the limitations of Rudy in Minnesota, and maybe it's just a bad fit. I think we all looked at that fit and we're just like, how is this going to work? But you're going to give time to everybody here. I will say about the Cavs, though, I was high on them. I might have even been higher on them than you, at least before this trade. I looked at this team and I said, this is a team that could win now. And then you make a trade like Mitchell and there's win now expectations, giving up all that and having the roster that they do here. But you just look at the early returns. Love playing the way he does. You mentioned Wade. I didn't see 8 of 11 out of him. 22 points, stopping Tatum at the buzzer. So he's another depth piece that they're going to have when Garland gets back. You have your big guys. You have your guards. Looks like a wing's emerging in LaVert.
Yep.
This team could win the East. I think this team could win the East.
I always, and you know, this is a consistent thing every time we have these conversations. And like, we basically had this conversation last year, right? When the Cavs got off
to a good start. Hot start. Yeah.
Yeah. And Boston wasn't off to as good of a start. And honestly, that conversation we had is like informative to me in the sense that, like, when I look at a team, Minnesota, perfect example after the Gobert trade. It's not clicking now, but you know, you're integrating a new piece. You're trying to find your identity. I would expect that as the season goes on, they're going to get better and better and peak at the right time. And the Cavs on paper do have what it takes, in my opinion, to really make a push in the Eastern Conference playoffs. But that experience factor is still so significant. Like Donovan Mitchell has that experience. Kevin Love has that experience. But when it comes to Darius Garland, Evan Mobley, even Jared Allen, who did have a first-round appearance, what it takes to win round after round, that is something that I'm always going to kind of give the edge to teams like Milwaukee, teams like Boston. But at the same time, you have to feel good as a Cavs fan right now, I think, of their ability to make anybody sweat or maybe even potentially upset anybody in a playoff series. It's just winning three rounds and getting to the NBA finals, that is something that's truly, truly special. And I don't think any team that accomplishes that feat should ever be diminished.
Yeah. And seeding isn't everything, but if you do look at the potential standings, the way they're going to line up here based on the start, I came into this year, probably, I definitely had the Cavs above the play-in line, but I probably gave the benefit of the doubt to Toronto, who's shown some good and bad early. We'll see with them. Mm-hmm. And Miami, I think I've at least seen enough to think they're going to take a little bit of a step back here to some degree. So I'm flipping Cleveland above Miami. I think there's a real chance Cleveland could flip above Toronto in that mix, even if you're still slanting them behind the Celtics, who have some questions themselves. And
I had the Cavs third. I had the Cavs third. Milwaukee and Boston ahead of them.
So if they're third, that's a manageable first round. And then, you know, second round, maybe it's a little bit of an even matchup. And if things break the right way, you're in the East Finals.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. And to me, that has to be the goal for the Cavs, is to really prioritize the regular season, because some of these other teams aren't going to prioritize the regular season the same way, right? Like even a team like Boston, if they have to choose between resting up, let's say Jason Tatum in March, where he's got some nagging injury and they want to,
they already rested Horford for a game,
right? Like if they're going to take the long-term approach and the long-term view, because worst case scenario for Boston, they have to go win home court in one of the first two games of a playoff series. And I think if you're a Celtics fan, you should have confidence in that, because Jason Tatum is a truly special player. I think when this team is fully healthy, this is absolutely the team that's built to win road games in the playoffs. So you can undo any regular season resting with just one of those games. And I think the same is going to be true for Milwaukee. I think Miami as well. Like Eric Spoelstra can go out and steal game one in basically any series. So I do think that the Cavs prioritizing the regular season and putting themselves in the best position to go out and win a playoff series by facing a lesser opponent, that has to be the priority. I would comfortably put them over Toronto. I thought Cleveland was the better team than Toronto last year, and Cleveland went out, and obviously I think their offseason moves were a little more significant than Toronto's. So assuming that health is there, I think that the Cavs should be above Toronto and Atlanta and some of those other teams that are kind of vying for getting into that home court mix.
Toronto did beat them on opening night, though. That's the thing about Toronto.
Well, it did take an assassination attempt. You have to remember that. It took an assassination attempt.
I was waiting for
you
to say that. You always say, oh, of course the Cavs didn't play the Celtics at full health. I was waiting for that one.
I didn't have to go to that well. I didn't have to go to my old bag of tricks, because they ended up winning the game, so it's okay.
So hopefully, is Garland going to play tomorrow?
Well, he did go through full practice. He's now upgraded to questionable. I guess his eye has opened up to the point where he's able to go through a full practice. And he was recently traveling with the team. I would guess yes, because it's a matter of, like, when you're talking about like the eyelid swelling coming down, it's not like a knee where you can have like a flare up after some exercise and all that. I would imagine that Garland is going to be back for Wednesday. So I do think there's a possibility of maybe an adjustment period with Garland back in the mix, right? Like you kind of get into a groove playing one way and now you're reintegrating another big piece. But you know, it's obviously a big help because even if he's a little rusty from the field and some of the shots aren't going down, he's just someone that makes everybody better. And I think that that's something that I would expect to be in effect right away when he rejoins the lineup.
So from the Celtics perspective, giving up 132, even in overtime, is just not something this team did last year, which is on everybody's radar, I think, around them to start this year. Is this a bad defensive start? Could this be a bad defensive team under a new coach without Robert Williams, all this? Or is it just kind of a slow start as they're playing smaller and guys are stepping in different roles? We'll see. They played great against the Wizards, who I'm not sure are decent or bad yet. They got to a decent start. They could be a bad team based on how they looked in that game.
I think they got offensive weapons. I think Boston should feel pretty good about what they did to them.
So what are you taking from the Celtics start, from that game? Just overall, your thoughts on them so far compared to what they were coming into this year?
You know, there's obviously still finding their groove. Not having Robert Williams is significant. And then Grant Williams being suspended.
Suspended for that game. That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. So Boston's got some reinforcements coming back, too. So I think that's going to help them a fair bit because as much as Cornette jumping up and down to try to throw off 3-point shooters is a fun novelty.
It worked on Okoro.
Yeah. Well, right now he's 0 of 10 from 3, so everything's working on Okoro. But, Grant Williams is obviously a much better player and a significant contributor because what stood out to me in that game is why was Boston's perimeter defense so shaky? And I'm sure that's a question you guys have been asking because, yeah, Robert Williams is out, but individually, you look up and down this roster, and it's full of guys that are plus defenders. And I don't know if some of it is just finding a groove and being used to some of that help coming from behind and it not being there, or a little bit of NBA Finals hangover where these guys played late into the year and it's going to take them a little while to take the level of seriousness and Jalen would say, flip the switch when it comes to the energy. The energy shift. Like I don't know what it is in particular, but I would think even without Robert Williams, that Boston's defense would look a little bit better than it has to this point this season.
Yeah, I think some of it's a focus thing for sure. They spent a lot of camp on offense from what I heard. The offense looks great, by the way.
Yeah,
we'll get to that next. But in terms of the defense, you are integrating some new guys, Brogdon, who I think is having an adjustment stepping in what they do on that end. But they've also switched what they do on that end a little bit. Like, they're almost looking like the Bucks to me in terms of how they're approaching defense to start this year, where they're like going all out to protect the paint, dropping a big back, taking that out of the game completely, and funneling guys around screens into that mid-range area. And it was interesting. Like, that's what you want to do analytically. And they've talked about that a little bit at this point. I actually asked JB about that. And, you know, he just kind of like threw his arms up in the air and said, the analytics say this and that, but we like that shot. It almost feels like every opponent the Celtics have played have looked at it that way, like whether it was Mitchell and LeVert taking those. Terrence Ross went off for Orlando against that drop. Yeah. And then on opening night, you had Harden kind of just shooting over it too as he takes more mid-rangers. So like they like the math of it, but in spots, you're going to run it. This is the classic debate we've had for 10 years. You're going to run into a team that feels a little bit more comfortable in that mid-range, guys. And if you're giving teams wide open shots there, they can hurt you on any given night, the Nets, any one of these teams.
I mean, if Darius Garland was in his groove, I think that would be something you would not want to be giving up because he's so comfortable with kind of that mid-range pull-up and hitting those shots. And from there, like, he can either hit the floater, he can turn it into a lob. Like, there's so many different things that he can do that if you're sagging off to that extent, he's going to be right in his comfort zone. So, it's one of those things where who knows if it's just experimenting throughout the course of a regular season. I think Boston is good enough to go out and experiment with different looks and try different things. But focus to me still seems to be one of the biggest things. Like, I don't think anything schematically, I don't think anything in their available personnel would lead me to think that their defense would be 22nd right now.
Good point. To that extent, yeah.
Yeah, so it's I think even with the personnel they have, there's another gear that this team can get to. And I would expect, like, I think this is the first time both of these teams have played an opponent for a second time. I'd expect Boston to come out and want to make a statement. And especially with this being a national TV game, like, I would expect Boston to really come out and show more focus than they did in the Garden on Friday.
So let's flip to the good. Tatum, he's reaching that level.
He's like, got the goods.
I've always been a Tatum fan coming out of college. Loved the pick. I loved what he did early in his career here. And then once he hit that stride in February of 2020, you knew he was going to be one of the better players in the league. I wasn't sure if he had the potential to be the number one player in the league, like in that Giannis, Jokic, Durant at one point, that kind of mix, Curry. It looks like he has that in him starting this year. The defense, the rebounding, the passing, the level that's gone to, the shot making, and just his approach in terms of getting downhill and playing on and off the ball with some pace. It looks like he's kind of mastered offense at this point. And the coach, the way that they're coaching in terms of pace and movement and all that seems to be helping him out a lot. I wouldn't be stunned if he wins MVP this year. I mean, he is just off to a ridiculous start. The pieces around him are really complimenting him. That Brogdon addition looks so crucial right now as he's playing healthy to start this year and fitting right in. And then him and Brown just seem to be in like a sync, you know, like they just seem to know how to play with each other at this point. And they have really good passers around them that they're letting set them up, and they're getting easier looks than I've ever seen before. So I am just thrilled with where Tatum's at. And this offense, like, you know, like you said, you can lock back in, focus defensively eventually. I don't think anyone knew if this offense could take another step with some of the stagnancy we saw, and they look like a whole different offense to start this year.
Yeah, and Tatum is the biggest part of that. He's the straw that stirs the drink. I think the addition of Malcolm Brogdon, obviously it received a lot of attention, but I still think that's underrated because they really needed another ball handler out there, and he's someone that he can go out and get his own shot, but he also understands how to play with pace, how to get guys involved, and is just a very intelligent player. So Jason Tatum making this leap is, you know, it's the biggest thing for you guys, because I think even if he was fully healthy last year, or even in the state he was, like, you play that final series over 100 times, I think it comes down near 50-50 on who wins, right? Like, I think Boston absolutely had enough to go out and win that NBA Finals. And if Tatum's taking another leap forward and the addition of Malcolm Brogdon continues to look as good as it did, this Celtics team should absolutely be taken seriously as a contender.
Especially if Rob gets back, and that'll be down the line, but he's sort of the piece that just elevates them, I think, to championship favorites as they stood coming into the year.
Yeah, so if he's limited or if he's not himself again, that is a big question mark, especially when you look at just how much pressure some of these teams in the East can put on the interior. Like, Evan Mobley is going to continue getting better. Jared Allen's a factor. Giannis is going to put pressure on your rim. Embiid's going to put pressure on your rim. Like, even Tyrese Maxey, like, you want to have kind of that backline help for someone as quick as him. So having Robert Williams able to play kind of that Draymond-like role at the four, where he's just erasing everything, is crucial to what makes Boston as good as they are.
I got one more thing on these teams before we get to some net stuff. Mobley. So I was interested in finally watching him up close. I don't think I got to watch him in person last year. So it was cool to do that. I got a nice new seat to start this year right by the floor. So I'm up close and personal watching this, and it's a subtle impact. And I'm interested to see in what you think of his start so far. Cause, you know, you're obviously looking to see him make some steps, add some layers to his game. Statistically so far, if we're looking at him, like, nothing, you know, 16 points, so he's taking a little step up in the scoring department. But overall, like, nothing flashes off his stat sheet. And really, when you watch him, nothing flashes in the game in particular. Like, there was no big Mobley highlight from Friday's game, if I remember right. But he makes a key hook shot over Cornette in the fourth, I believe. A few drop-off passes to him. He finishes for key baskets in there. Holds down, I think, the perimeter guys where he needed to. I think Brown overpowered him a little bit at times getting downhill, but overall I thought he was pretty sturdy defensively. And he just sort of has that steady hand impact at the four on both ends that makes a real impact on the game, especially in big moments. But overall, what have been your thoughts on him stepping in there year two?
Yeah, it's looking now like his game conditioning is back up. Him missing the preseason, I think, was an unfortunate setback that in those first couple of games, you could tell he wasn't fully up to game speed. But these last three games in particular, I think you're starting to see Evan Mobley, the work that he's put into the offseason, really start to pay off, back to double-digit field goal attempts in all of those games. The other thing that stood out to me, both in the Orlando game and the Boston game, was in the fourth quarter when the Cavs really needed a bucket, there were several times where they would run stuff directly through Mobley. It's not like, hey, you know, we're up 20 and we're going to experiment now with some Evan Mobley touches to, like, let's see if you can expand your game. Like, they're giving him those reps at really crucial times. And so often he goes out and makes the right play. I think he had 7 points, an assist, and probably a couple hockey assists in that fourth quarter against Boston. You look at the isolation stats so far this season, and opponents on the year are shooting 10% on Evan Mobley when he's guarding them in isolation. So he's doing really well in those spots. It's still a work in progress on the offensive end of the court, but I think he looks a lot more fluid. I think the jump shot looks a lot better. He's going to need to add strength. I still think he can get pushed off the ball a little bit, but just how fluid of an athlete he is and the way that he can kind of make that impact in subtle ways, it continues to blow my mind that this guy's just 21 years old. And ultimately, I think, once Darius Garland is back, things are going to be even easier for him, because as great as Donovan Mitchell has played, they've really been playing without kind of a point guard in the traditional sense, right? So if Garland's back, I think you're going to see things get a lot easier for Evan Mobley, Jared Allen, and even Isaac Okoro. I don't think Mitchell knows how to get a guy like Kevin Love, Jetty Osman, Dean Wade, those kind of pick and pop players or guys that can come off a pin down. He knows how to get those types of guys looks. But the guys that maybe have more offensive limitations or can be effective in specific ways, I don't think he has that same kind of point guard IQ that a Darius Garland has.
Yeah, big stuff from Mobley there in the fourth. In my notes, I got him for a go-ahead bucket over Cornette, or a game-tying one to start the fourth. A good rebound on a Boston miss in a one-possession game early in the fourth. Got free throws on Smart defending him in the post, which is impressive. I mean, he can really guard big. Smart can. Did give up an and-one to Brown. Like I said, Brown, super impressive, going through rim protectors and guys who can create some resistance at the rim defensively. But then another scoop layup over Cornette, who's 7'2". I mean, we'll see what he's actually made of this year, but he's a big guy in there. Got blocked by Horford.
The one highlight I remember from him was Jason Tatum was defending him on the three-point line, and he kind of spun around Tatum. Derek White came up, and then he just kind of went by him with ease for the layup. And that was something that, from a self-creation standpoint, I don't think we saw a lot of that last year. And you're seeing more and more of his ability to get to the rim when starting at the three-point line. And that's going to be a really important evolution in his game.
And he had a corner three, too, I believe.
Yes, he did. Yeah, so, he had a fourth quarter corner three.
So no, I like seeing a guy like that, the highs and lows of his game as he continues to grow, especially against a really good team like Boston. Again, these two teams are meeting each other with a lot of different strengths and weaknesses, and you know, you saw different flows within this game. I'm wicked excited for round two tomorrow at 7:30. We'll keep talking about these teams as when we head over to the Chase Down podcast, Justin and Carter's podcast with the Cavaliers. That'll be at 8:30 on the Cavaliers YouTube channel. We're going to hit on some of the Nets stuff from today. Just a crazy day. We were playing this yesterday, Justin. We didn't expect any of this. I was interested in your Kyrie thoughts at this point in his career, but I didn't even think we were going to get to that in this show. But now it all comes together. Looks like they're getting a new head coach in Ime Udoka. We talked about it earlier on the Garn Report, and we'll hit on it real quick here. But first, we're brought to you by Athletic Greens. Athletic Greens, 75 vitamins, minerals, adaptogens, probiotics, and more. You just pour it in your water every morning and you're getting all that. You could get these in different places, but it's all in one with Athletic Greens. And they're going to throw in a year's supply of vitamin D, immune boosting, as well as 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. That's athleticgreens.com/garden. And then Calm, the Calm app. I know everybody's freaking out about email leaving. Well, just back off. Give it a minute. assess what's going on here, and we'll kind of break it down for you in a minute. Calm.com/garden gives you 40% off a premium subscription of sleep sounds, meditation, yoga, a little bit of everything for your mind over there. Something for everyone. Millions of people use this, and you're going to get 40% off the full premium library when you go to calm.com/garden. Appreciate them. So where you want to go first, Justin, Ime or Irving? Because two simultaneous controversies going on in Brooklyn to start this week. It's almost like they just wanted to pile it on while the pan's hot right now in Brooklyn. 2-5 start, Nash fired, Irving sharing an anti-Semitic film and getting pretty defensive about it in the press conference the next day. And Ime Udoka coming off a year-long suspension for some sort of improper relationship with a woman in the Celtics organization. About to take over their team going forward. So where do you even want to start with this one?
I don't even know where to start, man. Like, it's disappointment stacked upon disappointment. The Kyrie stuff, obviously, there's no place for that at all. I hate the hypocrisy of, you know, 1 minute saying, hey, I have a platform, I have a responsibility to share this kind of stuff, and then moments later saying, you know, why are you taking anything I share seriously? Like, there's so many other things to talk about and all that. Like, if you are someone that wishes to be taken seriously, and I think everyone should have the opportunity, if they want to use their platform to, you know, speak out and talk about whatever causes matter to them, but you can't opt in and out of when we should take you seriously. You can't say, oh, I'm just, you know, sharing things without commentary.
He said he didn't promote it. That was his take.
Exactly, right? Like, no, you are promoting it. You can't opt in and out of that. And to me, it's tremendously disappointing. I was kind of hoping that you'd see a little more leadership from the Nets and from everybody involved, honestly, to really kind of, you know, push back against what he's doing. And it just hasn't felt sufficient to this point. But, you know, it's, like I said, it's just disappointing. It feels weird to, like, do sports talk around a situation like this when, to me, it feels pretty cut and dry of, like, you know, just be a good person.
Yeah, and this wasn't in a vacuum. Like, this came in the footsteps of the Kanye situation, and exactly. Jaylen Brown obviously had to distance himself from him, as did a number of brands, companies, and more because of these views. And, you know, we could get into them, but essentially, like, he's just sort of following in the footsteps of that there. Like, I'm sure there's some level of connection to diving into that topic. And, you know, I guess his take was that he was just sort of trying to figure out, like, what it was all about. And, you know, mm-hmm. he wasn't trying to promote any of the different things that were included. And I didn't watch the movie, or I guess it's a book two or something like
that. No, yeah, I heard Bomani talk about it. Apparently, it's like $12 to rent on Amazon. And it's 3.5 hours long. And Bomani's like, I was going to watch it, like, as a journalist, but then
I also saw Pablo Torre, you know, who did actually watch it, say that there was a section where they quote Hitler. And, like, you know, that's usually not a good sign.
sometimes you got to look at who your allies are on a topic, and that can be informative on whether or not you're on the right path. And
so here's the other thing. No real apology from him either. I mean, people were hurt by this. You know, people emphasized that this was dangerous, what he was sharing here. And we've already seen kind of the impact of Ye and him endorsing an ideology like this, where other people, whether it was in L.A., I saw there was an incident in Georgia, I believe, where, you know, people were standing with signs saying Kanye was right and this and that about the Jews. And, like, that sort of shows the problem with someone like this and having that platform sharing something that people could potentially co-opt. Like, you might not have Ye or Irving endorsing attacks or, you know, whatever it is on the Jewish people, but it could empower those groups or give them kind of like a person to point to if they're recruiting or anything like that. Like, that's the real problem here, is it legitimizes them.
Yeah. There's no apology. When Nick Friedel was following up, trying to see, hey, what point are you trying to make? Like, if you want to, you know, be a voice for a certain cause, like, let's clarify exactly what you are trying to say. And there's no willingness to even do that. And I think, it's another disappointing aspect of this, where it's like, you know, if you don't think you're promoting you just think people should see this, but you don't want to clarify why you think people should see this, and you don't want to like go in depth at all. And then when you get questioned about it, you get defensive and don't want to engage there. And when you hear that it is hurtful, you don't want to apologize. Like, to me, those aren't the hallmarks of productive dialogue or conversation. So, like I said, it's tough to even go in depth on this, because to me, it kind of just feels cut and dry. It's very disappointing.
So he has a year left on his contract. It feels like the Nets are done with him. I don't know if it would be in season or after. Certainly, they're going to have a tough conversation in terms of whether they want to keep rolling with them. And last summer, it didn't look like they wanted to in terms of marks and, you know, ownership there as well. No one wanted to commit to him long term. He was in potentially going to become a free agent if he declined his option. And it didn't seem like there was any interest in him league wide, even from the desperate Lakers. Is he done? And this is amazing, because we've talked about him for years, Justin. Like, you loved him in Cleveland. You thought he was next after LeBron. I never loved him. I was skeptical about him coming to Boston, but he sold me fast. And I said, this guy could become the face of the league. Like, you know, sharp, willing to dive in on topics, you know, like, great, phenomenal player. Like, just this guy who had charisma and personality and could sell shoes and all these different, like, it looked like he could have been the face of the league after LeBron. And now it looks like he's on the way out of the league in his prime.
Yeah, honestly, I'm not comfortable speculating whether or not this is the end, but honestly, it's in his hands, right? Like, he's talked about being willing to walk away from the game before, like, at this age, basically. Like, if he decides, like, hey, you know, there's been pushback, I want to go, like, I want to talk things through, I want to have more honest conversations, I don't want this to be a source of friction. I want to be kind of a positive force in life. Like, I think there's always going to be an opportunity to kind of, you know, even though things aren't going well right now, to reconcile that. But if you're going to continue down a path where it makes it hard for anyone to deal with you, it's going to impact your chances. So I don't feel comfortable speculating on whether or not he's done after this year, because ultimately I think it's in his hand.
It is. Yeah. And he thought he might be on his best behavior this year, you know, trying to prove himself, but it's already off to a rough start for this group. So they fire Steve Nash. I don't know why they didn't do that after they got swept, but it didn't look like he was the right guy for this group. It didn't look like he had a lot of heart for this job anymore. In terms of like everything they went through last year and him after being the spokesman for Ben Simmons' return and the controversy with Harden mid-year and now all of this. I had an idea that this was coming to an end when he got thrown out of that game. Like, it just kind of looked like a last move of desperation trying to fire up the team, and it didn't work. The Simmons thing hasn't gone well. They're last in defense by miles, and that was never Nash's strong suit. I thought that was probably like his fatal flaw coming into the situation, is that he just wasn't equipped to coach defense for a team that really needed it. And they are apparently looking to bring back Ime Udoka, who is the first assistant under Nash. And he was suspended for a year by the Celtics, and it's still really not clear why. Celtics let him go pretty smoothly and easily and quickly today. So who knows what kind of discussions had been had in terms of allowing for something like this in recent days or maybe even weeks. But kind of a crazy situation. We've seen a million different crazy things happen in this league. And now it looks like Udoka is going to come back with the team he swept, with the team he coached 2 years ago, who he obviously has connections to. I mean, he coached Ben Simmons too in Philadelphia. And a coach I still have a lot of respect for in terms of basketball acumen. Like, I think he just did such a great job with the Celtics last year in terms of the scheme, accountability, putting guys in the right position to succeed. And he has a lot of experience working with stars through the years in this league. But in this situation, I'm not sure, like, basketball acumen and tough talk are going to be enough to fix this. And then, of course, you have questions that are going to hit him right away in terms of what he did and what led to his ousting in Boston. So it's almost another distraction on top of what he's trying to address coming in, which are distractions and trying to get focus back on the court for this Nets team. So I'm very interested to see how this is going to go. I don't have high confidence that this is going to save the Nets.
No,
but it might be enough to stabilize them and maybe buy them some time. I don't know.
Yeah, and if the reports are true and this ends up becoming official, like, my hope is that there's a level of transparency. Like, I think the public is owed that, just, hey, like, what did happen? Because there hasn't been a lot of transparency over the situation, and even the fact that, like, Boston would be willing to let him go without compensation. Like, to me, that makes me, like, wonder, okay, exactly what was this? Like, what happened? What have we learned from it? What's going to change in the future here? Like, I just think that the public is kind of owed some of that transparency, and that would be my major hope. But from a basketball standpoint, I agree. Like, I think there's a lot of issues with that Nets roster, and I don't think it's something that you can put all on Steve Nash, and I don't think it's something that you can expect one coach to change. But obviously, like, the top end talent is there. It's just, can you get this team to play like a team? Can you get all the role guys in a situation where they feel comfortable playing off of those guys, those key cogs? And we'll see what this ends up being, and if this report ends up coming to fruition. But I think what's at the top of my mind right now is just, I'd like some transparency from the Nets over why if they move forward with this, why they felt comfortable with the hire, what type of due diligence was done. And I'm pretty sure that the media is going to ask those questions if this does come to fruition.
Well, Sean Marks did talk today, and it was kind of a jarring presser. He had to address this, had to address Irving. I think Tim Bontemps asked him why Irving's still around the team at this point, if they're kind of weighing punishment or next steps with him. And just this crazy quote. He didn't do media last night. He's not going to do it tonight. We don't want to cause more fuss right now. Let's let him simmer down and let cooler minds prevail and seek some direction, seek from the experts. He keeps saying that they're talking to, like, the Anti-Defamation League or whoever. The last post-game meeting didn't go well, but we're not trying to cover this up.
Yeah.
It is crazy down there right now. And I'll be going down there if they introduce Ime tomorrow or Thursday. They're off the next two nights. I know they're playing under Jacques Vaughn tonight. I just never had great hope for this team. Too much craziness. Even their GM, even Nash, one of his last comments as coach was, yeah, we're kind of immune to this. A lot of stuff's been going on. So it really doesn't even, like, you know, nothing can surprise us at this point with this group.
Even if there wasn't off-court issues, like, Durant and Kyrie miss about a third of the season every year. Like, are they able to survive that? Like, especially with how competitive the Eastern Conference is. Like, you know, if this was like 10 years ago where the East wasn't as deep, yeah, maybe you're able to kind of ride these waves. But I just think when you look at the top end teams in the East, and even a team like Toronto, who's got continuity, that's incredibly well coached, that's really deep, like, Atlanta is dramatically improved. Like, if you're not bringing your A game against those teams, I don't care who your top end talent is, you're probably not going far in the playoffs. So
I think they're heading to the play-in again at best.
Yeah, I agree. And I think if they're on that track, they're probably going to make some decisions at the trade deadline. Like, you can't be stagnant at that point. You kind of have
You get a sense that this ownership group's done. I mean, you have their owner tweeting about Durant's demands to fire Nash and Marks. You have the owner tweeting about Irving. Like, I think this franchise is done with these guys. Like, that's kind of the sense I'm getting, at least with how they talk about it. And then you have the GM at the podium always talking about the culture and needing to refocus on basketball. And I just don't see much hope left for this core. And does that lead to a Durant trade midseason? I think if they make the move on Irving, that could potentially be in the cards. And that's always something that was in the back of my mind after he had demanded a trade initially, is that they could go right back to this if this doesn't start well.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, from my perspective, I'm just glad that everything is smooth sailing with the Cavs right now, that everything, there's no drama, that, you know, it took a while to get to this point where there's kind of this organizational stability, and the fact that you kind of have a core in place, you don't have to even worry about, oh, if Durant hits the market, are we going to be looking to trade for him and all that? Like, none of that is a factor. You can just kind of tune it out, because ultimately, like, I'm just tired of it, man. Like, there's too much good basketball in the NBA right now. There's too many good teams to be focused on a play-in team that just continuously causes drama. I'm over it, man. Like,
Get ready. I mean, there's going to be people that say, oh, Udoka's there. Maybe.
Oh, I'm sure they're going to say that, but I don't think I don't think it's actually going to move the needle in a meaningful way if that happens.
No, I don't think so. People just look at the names on the paper with this group. And Zach Lowe said that too. Like, they're the on-paper champions. Like, that's all they are. They haven't showed like a tiny bit of hope, but that was with Harden there, and Harden's gone.
You know, the on-paper thing, I get it. But the on-paper thing, the conversation isn't as strong if the league did a better job of promoting its next generation of stars, all these other teams. Because, like, when they had Blake Griffin, LaMarcus Aldridge, Kevin Durant, everyone got so excited because those were the names that of the last generation of NBA players that are properly promoted. And you have all these good young teams and all this young talent that's coming up. Even Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, like, they're still relatively young and haven't got the level of media, like
Brown credit. Especially.
Yeah, they haven't got the level of credit and attention that I think their talent warrants. So it's, you know, on paper, sure, it's Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. But the reality of those two guys hasn't been meaningful in a while. Same goes for Ben Simmons. And I will believe it when I see it with the Brooklyn Nets.
Yeah, that's where I'm at. Boston, in terms of the controversy, I think that's the key here is they just get out from under this. I'd never imagine Udoka coaching for them again. I don't know who did. Some of the Celtics fans are a bit upset that they didn't get compensation. But at this point, like, number one, I'm not even sure they could under the rules. I had heard a little while ago that they kind of squashed that after the Celtics actually traded Doc Rivers about 10 years ago. So I'm not sure if they even could. And then even if they did, like, you know, what's the point? Like, at this juncture, I think they were just trying to move on. And the easiest way to move on, because I'm sure there was a lot of different legal stuff going on in the background in terms of could you fire him and, you know, when and how and what for what price. In this situation, Brooklyn just took him off their hands. And I'm sure that they were thrilled about that. And I'm not thrilled to see him go. Like, the last year was great. He did a great job. I don't know what happened.
Real life stuff ends up messing with the basketball, right? Like, it's not what we want. Because, like I said, I think the league is in such a great place from an off court or on court standpoint, and all of this kind of disappointing stuff on the outside it's disheartening, man. Because I think it takes away from a lot of players that put a lot of hard work in and a product that's ultimately really good.
It does. I don't know how much you know about Joe, but he's off to a solid start. I'm interested in what he's going to do here. And, you know, they seem thrilled about him. So a lot of people who have said, like, he was a big reason for their success against Miami. He was kind of in a front seat role in the East Finals in terms of game plans. Mm-hmm. Building a little bit of charisma with the media and stuff like that. Like, I think he's in a tough spot. And to start, what are they, 5-4-2? Not bad with the number 3, number 4 offense. They're in that range.
I'm impressed so far. I'm impressed so far. And I think too often people, whether it's front offices or coaching staffs, I think they always assume that it's like one person doing the work when it really is a collaborative effort. We just don't know how things are delegated. We don't know how that's all broken down. But you know, when you have someone that played a prominent role on that coaching staff, I'm not surprised that Mazzulla has stepped up and has looked so good, especially, you know, navigating some injuries early in the season already, like navigating some adversity. And when you're a team like Boston, you get marquee matchups to start the year because the league wants to start the season on the right foot, right? Like, let's get them to play Philly right away. Let's get them to play Miami, Chicago, and Cleveland even.
And what was his first move? You talk about the injuries. Rob goes down. Start Derek White, and it's a hit right away. He looked great in that lineup.
Yep, I think Celtics fans should feel good about it, and I'm curious to see as this team gains more chemistry, as they get more comfort within whatever changes to the system he's made, when Robert Williams comes back. I think this is a team that, once again, is probably going to have a very strong second half to the season and finish strong, because that's what these veteran teams do. And that, when you're trying to go through the marathon of an 82-game season, get your footing early on, try some stuff, work through things, because you know you have the confidence to finish strong once you have everyone, and once you are more kind of solid in all of those concepts. So I think Boston has a lot of reasons to feel good about the start of this season.
Yep, and as Justin mentioned, Celtics off the loss to the Cavs in overtime are going to get a chance again tomorrow to face them on ESPN, 7:30. We'll be thrilled to watch that as it goes live on ESPN. And we will actually join Justin's podcast, The Chase Down with Carter. That is coming up at 8:30. We'll continue this conversation, expand on it, hit on both these teams a little bit
more. I got things to pick your brain on. I want your takes. I want your analysis, man. I
love we'll talking hoop with you. You can ask the questions this time. We'll head over there. Thrilled to do it. Hope everyone joins us there. That'll be live as well on the YouTube channel. So go check that out. And of course, you can follow Justin Rowan at Cavs Anada, CAVSANADA. Great to have you here, Justin. The season's off to a really fun start. I'm sure we'll have plenty of conversations as it goes along.
You bet, buddy. Have a good one.